Welcome to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Amira.
And I'm Aphrodite.
And in this episode, we are going to be talking about the latest The Bold Type and Charmed episodes. Mm-hmm. But first, Aphrodite, you have a couple of announcements?
Yes. So first things first, I know for all of us following The Bold Type, we're like missing Adina a lot. I feel her absence. But good news, Nicole Boucheri is playing queer for a third time. Nicole Boucheri is going to be one half of an Arab couple. This movie that she's going to be shooting is from Sam Abbas, and it's being produced under his company Arab Q Film, which is an Arab LGBTQ production company, which super exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what else comes out of that.
Right? I mean, we don't have very much details. We just know that they're going to be co-starring in this movie that's called Aaliyah's Birth. So we're excited to see Nicole Boucheri play queer for a third time.
She seems to enjoy it.
I mean, we're enjoying it too, right? I mean, I don't know if this is too much, but like sometimes whenever an actress plays queer more than twice, I kind of wonder, you know, like.
Yeah. But also I feel like sometimes actresses, I think, find it refreshing to have a role with a female love interest rather than a male love interest, just like from, you know, the acting perspective, like in front of the camera, I think it's a little less like, you know, men are annoying. So
fine.
I feel like, yeah. I know. I want to have my hopes up too, but I just in like, you know, in interviews and stuff that I've seen from those actresses, they talk about like how wonderful it is, you know, in those scenes. And sometimes it's a little queer baity, but sometimes I'm like, you know, I feel like they're just like sick of making out with men or having these like trash, like love stories. So, and since every movie has to have a love story nowadays, so.
Basically. I mean, I'm thinking about like Rachel Weisz, who did Disobedience and The Favorite in the same year. She will probably be playing queer again at some point and will be ecstatic about it. And then Julianne Moore has played queer several times, like at this point as well. Like she was queer in The Hours. Then she was in The Kids Are All Right.
Which I hated, but.
I know. But it still counts. It still counts.
It still counts.
Yeah. And then she played queer opposite. Oh my God. Her name is slipping my mind right now.
Ellen Page.
Yes. Ellen Page. Like you become a darling of the community, even if you aren't queer yourself, because you're like so open to taking on queer roles and not caring what that says about you as an actor.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, I still have my little fantasy.
It's completely understandable.
Right?
I don't blame you one bit.
Right, right. So speaking of actresses who are very supportive of the queer ships that they portray on screen, I know Amira isn't up to speed on all the Juliantina excitement that's taken place in the last week.
I know, I'm sorry.
It's okay, it's okay. But I've been having an absolute ball, like following things that are happening on Twitter and just like trying to translate stuff from Spanish to English so that I can keep up with all the excitement. So like earlier this past week, both of the actresses, they both posted the same photo to their Instagrams. And it's a photo of them clinking their wine glasses together. And in the back is a mirror. And written on it is the hashtag Juliantina. Okay?
Wow.
And then the caption for it is blah, 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 blah. Stay tuned. There has been so much buzz and excitement over the possibility of a Juliantina spinoff, or at the very least, a series 2 of Amor o Muerte so that they could continue their storyline. But like the cast has been like eerily quiet for some time, and fans are like, what does this mean? What does this mean? Why are they quiet? And then boom, both of them posting that photo with the caption, stay tuned. You know? And so all of us are like losing our minds right now. And then, okay? They did a photo shoot. The photographer posted the video from that photo shoot. And then guess what was trending? Guess what hashtag was trending on Twitter in Mexico? Juliantina X Henry. Why? Because the photographer's name was Henry. This guy's name is trending all because he posted this little clip of Babarena as Juliantina from this photo shoot. So it's just been absolutely wild the last week and a half for Juliantinas, as we're called, the shippers. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to make sure you're aware of all this excitement that's happening. I know you're not in the ship right now, but there's a lot of activity.
I appreciate like the late, you know, gossip.
Oh my God.
About what's going on. Yes. Just to keep up with, like, I mean, the intensity of these shippers seems to be, like, otherworldly.
Right?
You know?
Yes.
You can tell, like, the hunger is there.
It's just wild.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited. Other things that are happening in other queer women of color ships that we're not covering on this podcast, but in case you want to know what the lesbian fandom is up to, definitely check that out.
Sorry, I just have one more update. I'm sure you've heard this news, Aphrodite. I'm extremely excited about it. But the late and beloved Whitney Houston's lover, Robin Crawford, will, quote, set the record straight about her relationship with Whitney Houston in a new memoir that's coming out. What? I don't know when.
Accuse me? But why would you say that if not to tell us y'all were doing it?
They were doing, like, come on. We all know that. We all know that. And it was like, I mean, I feel like the story already came out, like, one of Whitney's, like, managers or something thought it was bad for her image, and that's why they pushed her with Bobby Brown and then, like, basically literally killed her. So, you know, with that decision.
Damn.
But it's going to be published, I just looked it up, due to be published on November 5th. Oh, we have to wait so long.
Wow.
It's called A Song for You, My Life with Whitney Houston. And she will speak publicly about, quote, the moving and often complicated story of her life and relationship with Whitney.
Wow.
I'm very excited to see that news because I feel like it's been one of those, like, you know when, like, everyone knows a celebrity is gay, but, like, they're not officially out yet, but, like, the queers know that, and, like, the straight people are like, what? What are you talking about? You know, mm-hmm, I feel like that's mm-hmm. how Whitney has been, and ever since her passing, it's been, like, people don't really talk about it as much, strangely. So I'm kind of glad that this is happening. I wish it had happened sooner, but,
right?
You know,
oh, it's okay. Man.
Moving forward. That's something to look forward to. I love seeing all the pictures of them together. I feel like they were a cute couple.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, best friend / to lovers trope, my favorite. I think one thing that people are always afraid of is that after someone dies, revealing that they're queer is, like, something that would tarnish their legacy. And I'm like, no. You know?
No,
like,
yeah.
Why, it's like, yeah, why does the revelation that someone was queer have to, like, be a negative thing for your legacy?
Yeah, plus, like, I mean, her largest fan demographic right now is gay men.
Yes.
So I feel like if anything, that's going to, like, boost it. I mean, I know all the gay clubs are going to be, like, blaring Whitney in November. So in honor of the release of this memoir. Anyway, so on to our TV ships for the week. The Bold Type, episode 3, I believe, was kind of a doozy of an episode. There's a lot going on there, and we're going to try to focus just on Kat's storyline because it looks like there was a potential queer person who was a potential queer love interest.
Yes,
let's not jump ahead too far.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I will, like, say that I jumped immediately ahead.
I am 0% surprised.
Basically, as soon as she walked in and I saw, oh, Tia, she cute.
Yeah.
Is this her future boo? Because I'm okay with that. The one minor correction to our previous podcast episode is that Linda Zephyr is actually a white lady.
I know. I put that in my notes too. I thought, because when she was looking at the pictures, it looked like there was a black woman kind of in the forefront of one of the main photos that she looked at. So I thought that she was a black woman, but she's not. She's a very bland and unexcitable white woman, which is kind of her whole issue with her campaign.
But that's okay. That's okay, because this gives us an opening. I didn't know exactly what direction they were going to take with this Kat
mm-hmm.
supporting the campaign versus, like, running it or whatever. But, you know, we open with her walking into this headquarters where Tia's running Linda Zephyr's campaign, and Tia's super cute. And we're like, okay. So, like, where is this going? Like, Kat looks super cute and is being super cute, right? You know, she basically up and volunteers herself to be totally all in on this campaign, which also I feel like is another flirtation tactic. Like, if you're trying to cozy up to someone who's organizing a campaign, this is the way to do it. Just, like, dive head first.
Diving head first is coincidentally advice for another thing.
Yes.
But
I mean, it works, though. Like, right? Y'all are committed to the same ass cause. You might as well put in the time. And then also get to spend time with someone cute while you're at it. She ends up, like, swinging by the headquarters on a couple of occasions. I don't remember immediately the next scene, but when she's talking to Jane and Sutton about Tia, that's when we get an inkling to, okay, so Tia, maybe she is supposedly like potential love interest for Kat, but Kat's like, oh, no, 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 no. I'm still getting over Adina.
Right, right, right.
And then all of us are like, uh-huh.
Yeah. Because, like, Tia was giving off queer vibes, but more importantly, the two of them were vibing.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there was, like, there's a little bit past just, like, being nice and making small talk. There were, like, the little smiles, a little gesture, you know, the little twinkle in the eye. Mm-hmm. We all saw it. It was coming from both sides.
Right? And I love that Sutton's looking out for Kat. Like, Sutton and Jane and Kat are all at Scarlet. Sutton talks about how she was, you know, like, happened to be looking through Tia's Instagram, and Tia appears to be single. Kat does the whole thing like, oh, it doesn't really matter. I'm getting over Adina. And then, like the back of her hand to her forehead. Oh, I'm still getting over Adina. I can possibly, right, right. I can possibly be attracted to another woman.
Oh, goodness me.
I know. But then, like, as soon as she denies that anything's happening, she's scrolling through the girl's Instagram and smiling. Did you notice that? I'm like, God. And then like, she was definitely being playful, and she was like, yeah, you know, I don't think she could even deny that the girl's cute. But yes, you are. You're fresh from a breakup. You shouldn't dive into anything, but that doesn't mean you can't enjoy a cute girl who's right in front of you, right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean you can't look. I mean, for God's sake.
just look. Just look and just be playful and have fun with it, you know? Kat goes back to Tia's office, and she walks into her office looking fly, okay? This is after Kat finds out from Sutton that Tia appears to be single. She's wearing this, like, zebra print top, and she's, like, delivering body, right? And she's got, like, her high-waisted black ripped jeans, and she goes into Tia's office, and she plops her ass right on Tia's desk. And it's just, like, sitting there chatting, and that's when we find out that both of them went to NYU, right? And the banter between them is very flirtatious. She's like, so what did you do when you were in college? What did you do to get people to do stuff in college? And she was like, Tia's like, oh, I was one of the boring people. I was head of NYU Democrats. And she went, like, full scholarship. And then Kat says, oh, no, no, no. I'm, like, class of what? Class of 14?
12.
Sorry, class of 12. Really nice parents. And like, and then I love the next line. Okay. The next line is, oh yeah, you do seem a little bougie. I'm not going to lie. Kat says, oh, thank you. And then she sort of like waves her hair back. Like,
yeah. Does the like mock hair flip.
And she's like straight up giggling. Kat is giggling.
I enjoyed that interaction very much.
Yeah. That was a very cute sort of like banter back and forth. And, like, the other pieces of dialogue that they exchange, where Kat is just being fun. Like, what? Like, we can totally turn this around. Kat's like, it's not over yet. I waited in lines longer than that for a cronut.
I know. God, big city people. That was, like, such, like, a big city person thing to say.
Right? Also, another way to cozy up and, like, flirt with an organizer.
Absolutely.
Like juice them up with optimism. Like, believe in the cause. Believe that things can be turned around, you know? Like, commit the time. I'm like, this is the makings, I think, for a potential future thing, whatever this thing might be. Kat is flirting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's flirting. I don't know that she means anything by it, but she's enjoying it and she's giggling, okay?
Well, okay. So in the scene where Linda is supposed to be giving a talk and wasn't really rousing the audience's interest, there was a guy that Tia, like, briefly introduced.
Carlos.
I was watching with Kristen and she was like, wait, is that a boyfriend? Like, what's going on? Like, and I wasn't sure if, like, Kat was also not sure. I don't know. It like, happened so fast. I felt like I kind of, like, missed it. But I'm hoping that that's not, like, I don't know. I wasn't really sure.
I don't know.
Did you catch that?
No, she didn't explain who Carlos was. It's like they just introduced a character by name, and the guy doesn't have any lines, really.
Right, which is weird.
So, like, why would they give us his name unless he was significant to Tia somehow?
Yeah, and, like, Kat kind of did a double take of, like, but wait, who is he? And then, like, they were just kind of, they had to move on because they were about to start, you know, the event, so.
I mean, Tia asked him to get her a whiskey or something. Linda, like, gives a speech that nobody cares about, and then I'm like, oh, this is Kat's moment. This is the moment. Kat says, oh, can I say something? And she gets up on the microphone, and Tia, like, invites her up. And then Kat just, like, delivers. I don't know if you noticed this, but when Kat mentioned Wild Susan, a couple of people in the background audience who were visibly queer just sort of came
out of the woodwork.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I definitely noticed that.
Yeah, yeah. They're all like, huh? Wait, what? Wild Susan? Queer?
Yes, yes, yes. What? Yes. Bar? Yeah, yeah. What? I'm listening. I'm listening. And then it gets quiet. It's like, shh, the queers are saying stuff. Shh. You know? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so Kat gets up on the microphone and she names Councilman Reynolds as the reason why Wild Susan was shut down. So I was like, wait a second, is Kat running for city council? Like, is this what this is about? And then at the end of the episode, that's what we find out.
Kat shows up at the campaign headquarters to try to see what's going on, what's new, what can she do? And Tia tells her that Linda is no longer running and that both she and Linda thought that maybe Kat could run, which kind of threw me for a loop. I thought it was going to be like Tia was like, hey, by the way, you know what I mean? But like the fact that Linda also was like, maybe that other girl should run is like kind of funny to me. I'm excited to see where this goes because that's quite a commitment. And, you know, Kat already has a job, so I'm not really sure how she can run a campaign and do that job, let alone if she wins. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a full-time job, being like a city councilwoman.
Well, so, it's technically not a full-time job, so a lot of local politicians do it as a part-time gig. Because it's not like there's that much money sitting around to support you doing
it. Sure, but I don't know if you can do it while having a full-time job, I guess, is probably what I was thinking. Because it requires a lot of stuff like, you know, during business hours, all the meetings or whatever. And then there's like whatever evening town halls and stuff. And I don't know. I just feel like you have to have a pretty flexible schedule. And Scarlett barely allows for that. I mean, I don't know what hours those girls work, but I don't think they have regular 8-hour days. You know, they're regularly there. Like they get there early in the morning. They're there like in the evening when it's dark outside. Like
this is giving us like information about Kat's season 3 storyline. What they could do, and it depends on how quickly they pace this, is have Kat decide she wants to run and then play out the campaign. Really, then what happens is this season is going to, Kat being involved in local politics is going to be her major story arc for the season. And I think with season 2, it was like Kat discovers that she's Black. Kat discovers her queerness. Kat, like, you know, has all these desires to explore and like figure out who she is. And now this is like about Kat discovering herself in another way that's not dealing with her sexuality, but it is in some ways rooted in her identity, like the personal is political too. So I think this is a healthy direction for her to go as a character, but I think it's a lot to take on. I'm a little bit worried that the writers might be biting off more than they can chew. I don't know. What was your reaction?
I was a little bit underwhelmed, to be honest, because I realized at the end of the episode that not really too much had happened. Like she had just been asked to run and she didn't even give an answer yet. So we're kind of like, you know, nothing really changed in that regard. And I shouldn't say, sorry, I was not underwhelmed by the episode. I was underwhelmed by Kat's storyline.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. But I also am like, I don't really know where they can go with this because, you know, first of all, if Tia is going to be a love interest, which we don't know for sure if she's going to be, yet another thing that like didn't really happen in the storyline. So she would be her love interest plus campaign manager. I don't know. It's just, it seems a little messy. I have faith that the writers actually do have a plan for this, but I cannot for the life of me guess what that plan is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just got me stumped.
Right. I didn't anticipate that ending to the episode either.
Me neither, yeah.
Like I thought she would lead Linda's campaign, not run for office herself, you know? I also don't even know, is Kat ready for that? You know, like,
I know that a lot of people will participate in local government at that level and not know too much about it, but I feel like she doesn't know a lot about it. Yeah. It's like she's really starting from nothing. So I think it's kind of strange since it's not something she's ever thought about or like even a world she's been a part of before. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm curious to see where it goes. Let's say if she runs or if she even wins, if she can get some sort of like part-time deal with Scarlett, or would she even leave Scarlett? I don't know. I feel like the whole basis of the show is that they're all at Scarlett.
Yeah.
I mean, Jane left for a little bit and then came right back.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So like, let's say Carlos is Tia's boyfriend. I mean, you have to be really careful because Kadena fans are not ready for a new boo, and neither is Kat. Kat is not ready for that. And so, like, introducing that kind of flirtation or introducing that kind of potential this early in the season, like episode 3, Like, I kind of wonder if it's not going to work out with Tia, like that she, it's just going to be a like an initial flirtation that Kat gets out of her system because, you know, she wants to still feel and experience attraction to other women, right. But it's not going to lead to anything. Like, for example, we might find out that Carlos is Tia's boyfriend or Tia's straight.
Well, I mean, come on. Okay. Sorry. I mean, the writers should know better. Putting somebody on with like that style and like have that vibe with Kat and then be like, oh, just kidding. She's straight. I mean, come on. There would be riots.
No.
So, you know, maybe she's like bi and dating Carlos. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I do think that it's possible that we're looking at a queer friend scenario, which was also one of our hopes for Kat's storyline. So
you think so with that flirtation though?
I don't know if that's just the writer's way of establishing that Tia is queer. You know what I mean? Just being like, oh, it's a little flirty flirt. You know, that's how gay people suss each other out. I don't know. I mean, I do think that there are queer people in the writer's room, so I would hope that they're not that ignorant. But maybe it's just kind of like Kat is also like learning how to be queer and how to interact with other queer people. So maybe she's like, oh, another queer person. Maybe I'm attracted to them. And you know what I mean? And then just sort of figures out. I mean, I feel like it's happened to most of us where we're like, oh, actually, you're like a friend. That's your place in my life.
That would also be very realistic because, you know, when you meet another queer person for the first time and you're both single, or you perceive each other to be single, there's always that question of like, are you into me? Am I into you?
And then you imagine your whole lives together and like...
Right. So I'm kind of wondering if that, like, if it'll be that sort of thing where, oh, there's mutual attraction, but they just are going to be friends.
Yeah.
Or it's a spark and it's one-sided, you know?
Yeah, that could be true. But that, again, that's why I was worried it would be a little messy if Tia stays on as campaign manager and Kat agrees to run.
But you know, queer drama, dyke drama, it's always messy, you know?
I mean, I live for it, so.
Oh my God. And plus the fact that they're in the middle of a campaign, that's even more drama.
Anyway, we're anxious to see where that story goes, for sure. So let's talk about Charmed. What did you think?
We got more Nico than I expected in this episode. And they're building up to her eventual wedding with Greta. This week, Nico shows up at the bar that Mel works at, and she's like, we need to talk. And then Mel jumps back and says, you scared me. And then Mel's like, why so jumpy? No reason, I'm just at work. And then Nico, being as observant as she always is, notices that Mel doesn't have her tattoo anymore, the one on her wrist that associated her with the Sarcana. Mel's response to, like, where's your tattoo is, it was temporary. Nico's like, I know, right? I'm like, Nico's just like suspicious. She's super suspicious. And she straight up asked Mel, have you been to the Sarcana lately? And at this point, like, it's getting very clear that the dynamic between the two of them is increasingly tense and distrustful because Nico just does not trust Mel and is really trying to grill her and get at the truth. Mel, like, is trying to just do her job and be a bartender. She's like, I'm not really a member of the Sarcana anymore because Jada and I broke up. And then I think that's when Nico, like, takes a step back and says, like, I'm sorry and all that, right? And then that's when Nico says, well, it's been quiet lately and I considered showing up in person, but maybe things will be magically wrapped up by then. So Nico is, like, picking up on magic shit. She didn't have to use that word, magically, you know?
Well, it's because she saw the whole thing with that girl. Remember the girl who ran away from that demon thing that was, like, keeping them all there?
Yeah. So
I mean, she saw when, like, they came back to kidnap her, like...
Some shit is up.
She knows what's going on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Mel says, I'm at work. I don't need you showing up to interrogate me. Which honestly, yeah, I'm glad Mel said that. Because Nico was being a little bit much with the sudden interrogation while Mel is at work. It's not like Mel invited her to be there. But that's when we find out that she's not there to interrogate Mel. She's there because she and Greta are preparing for their private event bachelorette party at the bar that Mel works at.
And she is going to be working that event, but she's just now putting together as she's talking to Nico that's the event she's working.
I know, right? Oh my gosh. Did you notice, poor Mel. Right? Did you notice when Nico says Greta and I are preparing for a bachelorette and she looks over to Greta and Greta smiles and gives this gay ass head nod? Did you see the head nod? That was ass head nod. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, they're here.
That girl is either queer or she practiced that.
Oh my God. No, I feel like you have to be queer to pull off a head nod like that. That was just like extra.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty butch straight girls do the head nod, but I feel like she, you know, as an actress, she could have definitely gotten to that character well enough to pull it off, but it was just, it seemed very natural. I just feel like she must have practiced in the mirror a few times. Again, if it was not innate to her, meaning she's not queer.
Well, maybe it's the styling too, because Greta with the good hair, did you see how vertical it was? Mm. There was so much height on that hair. Yeah, the coif. It was perfect the last time we saw it. It was perfect this time too. Whoever is taking care of Greta's styling is definitely queer. Queer looks the whole episode. So yeah, Greta gives that gay ass head nod. And then she explains, Nico explains that they're there to pick out a menu for the bachelor party that Mel is working. And suddenly this reminded me of Black Lightning. Remember when Grace was staffing that like fancy event that Anissa was at with her new girl?
Yep. Yeah. And she had to watch them, God. Flirting and stuff with each other. Although that's a little bit different. I feel like this is far worse because Mel and Nico were actually together Mel's memory a significant period of time.
Yeah. So. And plus Nico's getting married, you know, not just like flirting making out with somebody new. So like you can see that Nico starts to soften up a little bit and she goes up to the bar and then Mel's like glass of Pinot Gris. Nico says, you know my order by now. We've now jumped to the scene where actual bachelorette party has started.
And Nico looks stunning, BT dubs.
Yeah, she was wearing a cute little dress.
Looks really good.
And I was kind of into Mel's look too, with the whole like, it was kind of like a chef look, you know, with the jacket that goes all the way across. And it reminded me of another queer look, which is Cate Blanchett in Ocean's 8 when she's wearing that chef's thing with the buttons. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And she's like pushing the cards.
Yes.
Thank you very much. So that kind of, that reminded me of that look. Mm-hmm. Anyways, the looks. So she's at the bar and Nico has softened up and she says, are you all right? I went to a wedding once after a breakup. It's not fun. And Mel reassures her that it's totally okay. And then like Greta from the background calls out Nico, babe, time for toast. Oh my God. And poor Mel having to witness that, you know?
Oh, I know. So obviously, like when Maggie comes up to Mel and tells her there's like trouble and they have to go, it's like a welcome interruption for her. Mm-hmm. But it's funny to me because I'm like, did she just leave? Like she just left.
Who's working the event, right?
Yeah, she didn't notify anybody. She just left. And then Nico, I wasn't sure if she actually overheard the conversation or if she just saw them leaving. But she like watches them leave and like looks really concerned, but of course she can't leave her own bachelorette party to follow them like her PI instincts would want her to. So anyway, so Nico stays out of harm's way, but Mel like dips and Nico remains ever suspicious.
I know. And I'm pretty sure Nico overheard when Mel and Maggie were talking about like ghosts or demons or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But it's like, you know, the event's pretty loud. So I feel like realistically she shouldn't have overheard them. But like, since it's a TV show, I'm like, maybe that was the purpose of that scene. You know, I would have thought that if she did overhear them, she would try to follow them. But, you know, like I said, it was her bachelorette party. So I guess she can't leave either way.
Yeah. But. Right. I mean, also, how could you leave Greta when she looked that fine? Did you see her in the striped suit?
I did, yeah. She looked very good. It was like butch couture. Like.
Oh my God. It was so fucking dapper. I mean, that's an outfit I would wear. Just like the striped suit with like the black underneath and then the gold necklaces. Hot.
Yeah, but you would wear like heels and makeup.
Yes, I would. Well, she was wearing, she was wearing makeup for sure. I don't know.
She definitely was wearing makeup, yeah.
But I was really into that outfit. And I was like, oh my God, I want clothes like this on the show. And I feel like we don't get enough of that.
No, I know. Yeah, it's true. I definitely liked her outfit, but I was also like, ugh, Greta. You know, like, she's just like in the way to me, you know?
Really? I was kind of like, why don't we turn this love triangle into like a quadrilateral? You know, like, why not? See,
the fact that they aren't really going into Greta's character or making her like, I mean, they're not making her unlikable, but they're not like really making her three-dimensional at all makes me feel like she's a disposable character. Like that's the intention in that storyline is that like we're not really supposed to like care about her because then we won't feel bad if/when they break up. So anyway,
right, we're also getting other information. We later find out what the situation is with Jada, and then that's like, oh, are they really are setting up Melko to be endgame here because they're not giving Greta any lines really. and Jada is fading away and is specifically running away.
Yeah. So before we get to that, mm-hmm. we, you know, all the whatever shit goes down in the regular storyline. And then Nico calls Mel when she's with her sisters. And we don't know what it's about, but apparently she called her to the Sarkana hideout and the place is like torn up. And Nico's like, just tell me what's going on. I demand to know, blah, blah, blah. And Mel, and it's like, you can really see, I feel like, the fear and the urgency in her face in this scene where she's like, you need to go. Like, whoever did this could come back. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Nico finally understands really, like, the gravity of the situation and, like, what they're up against. Probably not completely, but at least enough to be like, okay, I will leave now, but with the promise that Mel will fill her in later.
I do want to rewind a little bit. Nico says, like, I don't believe you. And this is, like, as direct as she could possibly be. She, like, says to Mel straight up, I don't believe you. I've been in multiple situations where reality feels altered somehow by you. Tell me the truth. You're hiding something from me. This overt confrontation. Nico's like, I'm done with the lies. I'm done being indirect. I'm done, like, subtly trying to interrogate you. You need to tell me what the hell is going on. And this is the shit that happened at the beginning of the season, where Nico was digging too deep and Mel didn't know what to do about it. But this time Mel does something different. She freezes time and then she hops behind Nico and says, I'm a witch.
Yeah.
And then Nico's like, oh my God, now there's no way. I have to know everything now. And Mel is like, I'll tell you everything, but right now you have to go. And Nico says, okay, but this isn't over. And this is significant because in this timeline, Mel has decided to be honest with Nico. Instead of trying to protect her from information, just tell her the information that she clearly will not stop seeking out.
I really like that scene because it was like, I don't know. I'm liking the continuing interactions between them and like seeing how much Mel cares. And I feel like Nico is starting to care too, not just about like her curiosity about the case, but about Mel and her involvement in the situation. I don't know. I'm excited to see how that develops. But yeah, so Mel goes into the Sarkana hideout with that like secret door and everyone inside is dead. It's like horrific. Somehow Jada survives. She thinks it's because she's half white lighter. And she says that Fiona did this big blast or whatever, and she has Harry, and it's this whole big thing. But Jada says she's leaving, and she says, you and your sister should too. Which I was like, do you know who they are?
Yeah.
I'm like, they're the charmed ones. Why would you tell them to leave? Like, they can't leave. This is their fight. This is, like, literally their purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, so Mel says that they have to stay and fight. Jada kisses her goodbye, and it's a very, like, closure kind of
cheek kiss before she sort of, like, faded away. I don't know if that's the end of Maleda, because she's straight up running away as the apocalypse is approaching, you know? Mm-hmm, she's running away to safety. Like, she's lucky to be alive. I think this is another moment when I was kind of like, you know, she and Mel maybe aren't right for each other, because Nico is someone who runs into danger. She's like, danger, right. I'm going to go investigate. And, you know, like, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Exactly. And like Jada, she's like, you know what? I barely made it out of this alive. I lost all my friends. I lost this Arcana. I got to bounce. Please take care of you and your sisters. So I think a couple of things in this episode do point out that they are setting up Melko to be endgame. Like, obviously, like, Greta's super cute, but she's not being fleshed out in the way that we would expect her to be if indeed Nico was going to end up with Greta. And then Jada deciding to run away from danger instead of, like, confront it head on is another sort of indication that they're not really compatible, Mel and Jada. And then the decision here where Mel says, I have to be honest with Nico, knowing that telling her the truth is going to put her life in danger, but her life is already kind of in danger, you know?
You know, honestly, it feels like this is Mel's chance to redo her whole relationship with Nico and kind of do it right.
Yes.
And I think she didn't really see it like that at first. She thought it was just like over and done with, which obviously we were led to believe the same thing. But now it's like, I mean, we'll still see how it goes and with how it's going to go between Nico and Greta, but I'm kind of excited that this is like their new meet cute.
I know. Their meet cute dynamic is kind of antagonistic. There's no trust. There's not really like love is just an intense desire from Mel's part to protect Nico and from Nico's end to, like, seek out what the hell Mel is trying to hide from her.
Yeah, and it's really to be expected from those characters. It's kind of cute. I don't know. I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah, I also like that their new relationship in this timeline is one based on the truth. You know, they're not even together. And Mel still feels that she owes it to Nico to tell her the truth. I think what it does is respects the other person's autonomy and their mm-hmm. right to information, which I think is something that Mel very hastily and stupidly decided to deny Nico the first time around. Considering how much Maggie and Macy's significant others are involved in all their witch drama, it's right. just like, what the hell? Like, why did Mel have to be the one to try to cut Nico off at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's bullshit. Yeah, I know. It seems like the tides are kind of turning with this ship, and I'm hoping that it is indeed going to be a ship.
Right?
That they're going to come back together, because they don't really have a lot of episodes left in the season, and I'm wondering if Nico's wedding, or lack thereof, will be a feature of this season.
Oh my gosh. You know what I think is going to happen? I think the apocalypse is going to happen on her wedding day. And boom, they don't get married.
She's going to be like,
yeah.
She's going to be like, this is a sign that I shouldn't marry Greta.
But it would be perfect timing, because what it does is it, like, keeps them from getting married
mm-hmm.
while still giving us all the drama and buildup between Mel and yes. Nico.
So they'll have to put off the wedding.
They'll have to put off the wedding. Or the apocalypse is going to make it impossible for them to get married somehow. Like, Nico's going to get mm-hmm. sucked in to all this magic business, and she disappears on Greta, like, at the moment.
Ooh,
like, do you know what I mean? Like suddenly apocalypse is looming. Nico's like, I got to save the world. I can't get married to you right now. Sorry, Greta. You know, some shit like that. Because I think it would be a missed opportunity if they didn't give us the, like, lead up to the wedding. And, like, mm-hmm. they're building up to all this shit at the same time. Like, they're giving us the bachelorette party, you know?
I think that that's supposed to be, like, an integral part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
You know, my hopes are way up there.
Right?
I hope they don't get dashed.
Oh, my God. Remember how, like, distraught and we were in such despair when Melko broke up. We were like, oh my God, mm-hmm. Nico's not coming back. It's not Endgame after all. And then we were like, well, what if Milena's the new Endgame? And then, like, Jada's out of the picture. It's just like, I keep being surprised. So even if I make a prediction, I can't even say that it's going to come true.
Yeah, they're really keeping us on our toes. And honestly, I appreciate that, because this is the kind of lesbian storyline that I would like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where it's like there are multiple options and they're all good.
Yeah. I also like that in this episode alone, there were four queer women, three of whom were of color. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because we saw Jada, Greta, and Nico and Mel all in the same episode.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just more fun when you get to see multiple queer women occupy space on the screen.
I agree.
And all have some role to play. Granted, the scenes were shorter, but I think they are building up to something more important.
Woo! Oh, my goodness. So both of our shows are keeping us on our toes. We're going to have to keep watching to see what happens. And we're, like, really excited to see what happens.
I'm really excited. Like, Charmed this season has been a joy for me on a weekly basis. It's like,
mm-hmm.
I love the show. I mean, I'm annoyed at some things, but, like, for the most part, I really love that Mel gets such a meaty personal storyline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even the overall plot is really good. I mean, like, honestly, compared to the original, like, the stakes are higher, shit's going down, like, stuff is actually happening in this show. In the original series, it was, like, a lot more low-key.
Was it?
It was
Yeah,
it's like somewhere between this reboot and, like, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. That's how I feel about, like, the original series. It was like, so I'm very appreciative of this, because it's, like, really more of, like, a drama, and, like, the intensity is there, and there's, like, they're building up to this crescendo of the season finale, and I'm definitely here for it. Like, it's keeping me interested, and it's keeping me engaged.
I will say to the Milena shippers out there, if this is the last scene between Mel and Jada, I'm sorry.
I feel like she's going to have to come back in some capacity. Just, like, maybe, I don't know. Maybe she's like, oh, I had to come back and fight or something, you know, in the finale. Right?
Oh, yeah. Like, if just to redeem herself. Like, she decides that she can't run away, and she's going to use her white light or whatever powers to help the Charmed Ones. in the apocalypse. Because she still has something to offer. She's still, like, she could still be part of the fight. So maybe she runs away now and then shows up again in the season finale just in time.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in time. And maybe she shows up during the apocalypse at Nico's wedding, too. Who knows? Like, you know, like, all of this builds up, right? All at the same time. Why not? Why not? You know?
Right, right. Anything is possible.
Yeah. Awesome episode this week. Who knows what's going to happen?
So we're looking forward to the next episode and for sure the very soon to air season finale of Charmed.
Well, thanks for listening and hope you'll join us again next time.
Bye.
Bye.